SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews, taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
For those of you that, like me, I had not seen the just horrific sadness, the news involving Bodie Miller and his wife Morgan, and the loss of their daughter in a pool mishap, and that was the one of the things that's kind of taken Bob Baffert kind of away from the glow of Justify, and the hearts go out to the Millers. What can you say? It's just awful. And so Bob Baffert kind of withdrawing here a little bit this week because he was, when the word got to him, it really, and they were having a, Belmont watching party. And it's just very, very sad. So very understanding of, of how this, given Baffert's the families, the two families' connections, and really that when I kind of connected those dots yesterday after we got off the air. Tough to come away from that one. That's I've mentioned before. My parents lost what would have been an older brother for me, and it's one of those things that you can't you don't recover easily, if ever. And I think "if ever" is probably the right word, the right description. Meanwhile, on the racing front and the business front, OBS today starts, and 10 o'clock, actually less than an hour. 3 days of sale, and the last major group of 2-year-olds going through the ring. And when we talked to Sid Fernando, start hour two today, the Scat Daddy portion of the Triple Crown, I think everybody might recall that at the beginning of this five-week journey, one of the big storylines was, well, Scat Daddy can't possibly get a Derby winner. And that turned out not to be the case. one of the things that I want Sid to maybe talk about, because in the wake of John Gunther joining us on Monday, his notation and his view of Justify physically having a lot of his mare, that the mare is very evident to him in Justify. And he also mentioned that the Will Take Charge colt, the half brother, that it looks like the Gunthers will campaign also. That's, I did see quite a bit of people noting that you know, Scat Daddy obviously gets the sire credit and is the focal point of discussion, but you know, how about the mayor? How about Stage Magic and Ghost Zapper? So there's two to tango when it comes to the Progeny. And let Sid riff. And there's some really good questions that have come out of the post Triple Crown long term breeding plans. And one question that was interesting is, in terms of Justify's stud value, what does the undefeated Triple Crown winner, what does that portion do for him? And frankly, it doesn't feel like there's any more added value. Even if he, as he continues and runs a few more times, there's only so many mares in the two hemispheres that he can cover. And at a price that market conditions will allow. So what, how much more can he be worth on the way in which stallions are valued? And so let's Sid touch on that as well. And also, going through the weekend, of course, the Quality Road success this weekend, two winners in New York and two elsewhere, and give a little, little Quality Road appreciation. But it occurred to me, looking through the charts, and Andy Serling after Sid at 10:30, because I want to talk about some of the way in which other races, in addition to the obvious results. Some we haven't talked about, and there were some very interesting races, particularly the turf races, and most notably the Manhattan. So we'll talk that with Andy, too. But when you look at opportunity, and he came up again yesterday, the record that he's amassed, and he's obviously any given Saturday's best son. Well, what does this mean for, where's opportunity going to go? What does he do for a stud career? And I mean, he's obviously going to get a chance, right? I mean, durability and longevity and so forth, but not a fashionable pedigree per se, right? So it feels like a regional sire kind of a profile. Lots to do with Sid today, and looking forward to it. And I suppose since we mentioned regional stallion opportunities, lots of regional stallion result and offspring on display at OBS. And actually was perusing the New York types, but there's a little bit of everything at this sale. Obviously, lots of Florida and lots of other markets represented today. It should be a very interesting sale, and the Scat Daddies that are involved, that are on the roster, obviously will get a particular showcase. There's four that will go through the ring, including a colt today, who was one of the Zippy Breed Show runners. That's the colt out of Setula for Top Line, Hip 211, that goes today, and a 9.4 breeze. And of course, you can watch any of this, any of the breezes. It's fun, actually. And we talk about watching horses work and so forth. Well, watch the breeze shows. And of course, it's also, haven't discussed this in a while, as the two-year-old races are, now dotting race cards, one of the little hints that you can take is to go to all three websites, four websites, you know, Barrett's, OBS, Keeneland, Fasig Tipton, and watch the breezes. Look up the breezes. The video's available, and you can see how, you know, the horses went. And if, for instance, at OBS, it's over the, you know, it's over the synthetic. But, you know, Timonium and all this, all the sales, Florida sale, the Gulfstream sale, it, they're all there. And you can get a little bit of an advanced look, and it's worth it. It's worth the effort. So there's one hint that we haven't brought up in a while. An Uncle Mo is going to be through the ring early. Hip 41 was one of the best, if not, it may have been the best move time wise. But it's not all about time, and you get plenty of horses that go a quarter mile, and some even three fifths. It's always interesting, and it's fun. I found myself, it's one of those things that you can find yourself the proverbial rabbit hole. All of a sudden, you keep looking. The Uncle Mo today is going to absolutely be a big seller. Out of Mississippi Queen, an unraced Artie Schiller mare, but second dam. Siempre Asi, the dam of Asi Siempre. Very nice Silverhawk mare Asi Siempre was by El Prado, but a multiple winner, almost $1 million in earnings. You also have Outstrip, the Exceed and Excel that came out of Siempre Asi. So there's some black type, and the Uncle Mo Hip 41 should be a big seller, and we'll keep an eye on it today. Goes through Wednesday, and their third day, they're also, you know, they've also got horses of racing age types. You've got some bloodstock offerings mixed in with this sale. In addition, I want to get one note. I got a really nice letter from Ron Schoenfeld yesterday afternoon, evening actually, and alerted me to something that I had missed, and I quickly went to look and discovered not just, you know, the focus of Ron's note, but a second passing. Ron wrote about Ron Felix, who passed away last week, and then I found that Mike Welsh had combined the passings, not just of Ron Felix, but also of Ron Gaffney. And the two, both South Florida and Felix 90, had been, you know, a long time successful horseman. And Ron wrote about, you know, his work with him, and Alan Iwinski, who also had ties to Felix. Welsh also, you know, was very familiar with Gaffney, who was a New England horseman, and notably, Gaffney continued to work his own horses. He'd been a jock and continued to work horses up until just a year or so ago. Felix died a week ago Wednesday, a week ago today, and Gaffney Saturday. Gaffney was 77, and Felix 80. I wanted to pass that. I had missed it later in the week. So I appreciate Ron let me know. And Ron's story himself was great. He worked for Harry Trotzik back at Hialeah. It was pretty great. And he hot walked Moccasin, the great 2-year-old champion. Pretty cool. And had a lot of ties to the game for a long time. And there's so many people that had periods of their lives that some stay in the game forever, some move on to other things, but once it's in your blood, that's it. It's not going away. Pete Fornatale is going to join us in a little bit. After the break. And Andy Serling, I mentioned. Pete and Andy and Sid. John White later, hour 3. Going to catch up with Seth. We had fun with Seth when he swung through Belmont at the end of the week. And then broadcast Friday and Friday and Saturday. Capital OTB. Mike Smith is going to join us as well, and originally was going to have Mike at 7:30. I think he's going to end up either after Pete or in hour 3. So looking forward to talking to Mike as well. He's made his appropriate television appearances, including that funny scene with Jimmy Fallon and the Capitals. Everybody drinking out of the Stanley Cup. Speaking of which, the Stanley Cup, I sent out the... Did you see the cover from Sports Illustrated? The piece by Tim Layden. Layden is taken after a very intense coverage of Triple Crown for Layden and Sports Illustrated. Tim and his wife are in Ireland this week and are there till Sunday. So we'll talk to Tim Layden when he gets back. But his piece is terrific. Post Triple Crown coverage and SI with a pretty tough assignment in terms of how do they cover the week's sports. You have a Triple Crown winner on Saturday. On Friday you had the NBA championship decided. On Thursday you had the Stanley Cup decided, right? And then the French Open concluded on Sunday. Pretty crazy. So SI I guess has 3 regional covers. They've got in the DC basin, they've got in the Mid-Atlantic, I guess, the Caps. Out west, the Warriors, and the rest of the country justify. And it's a hero shot. It's a big hero shot, as opposed to the controversial American Pharaoh cover. Back after this, Pete Fornatale kicks it off.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I keep my hands on myself. Think I'll dust them off, put them back up on the shelf. Just a little baby girl is in need. Am I coming out of left field? Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks. I've been feeling it since 1966.
We're back at the races and 20 minutes into Wednesday. Pete Fornatale, who I saw Thursday and then didn't see, somehow didn't see again the rest of the Belmont weekend, but I know he was there and I know he had a great time and was also monitoring the Belmont betting challenge. We'll talk about that result as well. And Pete, good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. Yeah, it was funny. It was one of those things where it seemed like you couldn't walk 10 feet without seeing somebody, but you didn't always run into the people that you really wanted to run into. That's just how that goes sometimes on those big race days, but great vibes and good times at a beautiful Belmont Park last weekend, that's for sure.
Well, it turned out to be the perfect Saturday after, you know, lots of concern about what we were going to deal with weather-wise, and so I think that brought people out as well. You know, they were waiting, at least it seems, some of the walk-up crowd to see how that was going to shake out. And, you know, about midweek, you know, I asked up in the marketing department, I said, you know, where do things stand? And they said, well, we got walk-up tickets, general admission. And they were, you know, a little surprised.
You could feel it back there. It was, the joint was jumping. And, you know, I think generally speaking, they do, I think the clubhouse experience is pretty good. I also had some grandstand seats. One of the things I like to do on a big day like Belmont is stay in touch with my fan roots and always sit out there. And rather than get into the full-on grandstand experience, I'll just say that I will be writing a very constructive letter offering some free consulting to our friends over there. But it was a fabulous day, and I really was just very excited to be a part of it.
Well, give us some feedback too, Pete. The experience and your impressions. I know you discussed, you know, what has become I'm not using the word controversy because it's not a. It's not something controversial. It's just an issue that, you know, that has to be looked at and massaged and examined and addressed.
I think it's so thorny for me that I'd rather stick to just talking about it in terms of how attitudes have changed. And I think there's an economic trickle-down effect to why riders' attitudes have changed from 2004 to 2018. And I think it's worth, you know, I'm not going to stand here and talk about why I think it's like the biggest problem in the world, but I do think it's something interesting to at least discuss and look into. And when you see, you go back and watch 2004, and you know, for various reasons, political and I think just sort of jockey room cultural, that was a situation where one figure maker friend sent me a note that that Smarty Jones was to the pace call 20 lengths faster than Justify, which I thought was just really interesting. And I do think it's something that, changes, obviously, what the task of a big horse is when going for a prize like that. Now, all that said, the horse did what he had to do. He looked brilliant doing it. But it is interesting when you think back to that run of the two out of three horses, how, you know, in a way it just gives me more respect for a horse like Smarty, who nearly got it done despite, you know, several other horses in the field, jockeys in the field riding the horse, as opposed to what we saw on Saturday. But I don't say any of this to take anything away from the performance. I just think it's interesting. And when you go back and you look at the Belmont Stakes of the last 20 years, it's something that you know, should be taken note of.
Well, fair enough. It bothers me, frankly, that comes up as the first topic ahead of the performance of the winner, and that to me is just inappropriate and unnecessary, because this horse wasn't losing no matter who went where, when, and how.
I only mentioned it because you specifically said, I mean, you said...
No, I know. I just, as part of the...
The controversy came up. It wouldn't, if you'd thrown it to me and said your first impressions, it wouldn't have been the first thing I said at all.
No,
I think the story
just inclusive.
Is how well the horse
it.
Ran, and Baffert taking his place among the, you know, if he didn't have it already, which he probably did, but taking his place among the immortals, I think, is the story. And I'm with you, Steve, what I'd prefer to focus on. But I can't say that people who are making those type of observations, they're not like crazy. It's not, this isn't tinfoil hat stuff to me. There's something to be discussed about it. But yeah, I'm with you. I'd prefer to talk about the winner and that performance and how that all went down before we get down into the weeds.
Well, then let's do that, and then we can morph into what was going on in the what turned out to be a pretty volatile betting challenge leaderboard. I mean, I got a kind of a glimpse afterward, kind of figured out what transpired the next day. But for starters, your view of Justify's wire-to-wire performance.
Yeah, I mean, he absolutely, to me, was bouncing back in the positive direction. I was among those who didn't take the most positive view of the Preakness, but I think when you go back and you look at it again and you look at the Herculean effort in the Derby, given the pace, he had a right to regress coming back 2 weeks later. And I think the horse that we saw on Saturday is much closer to the horse that he is. And, you know, some people think I'm nuts to say this, but I still feel like the best should be to come from this horse, because I feel like he's had races where he's run fast early, races where he's run fast late, and he feels to me, and I haven't dove into all the pace figures yet from Saturday, but he just feels to me like a horse who's got a race in him where he puts it all together and does something, you know, that's going to, in terms of the clock as well as eyeballs, really impress. And the other thing, you know, an observation about Baffert, in addition to the way that he's turned these New York mini Breeders' Cup cards into his own personal playground, I just think it's impressive the training feat of the six races in 111 days. And when you look at Baffert the last few years and you see how he tailors his program depending on the horse and can still get maximum efforts and dealing with potential setbacks, whether it was, you know, Farrow losing time, having to take his time with Arrogate to get to the top of his form cycle, and then to be able to cram in so many big efforts in a short period of time with Justify, it's just, it's pretty mind-boggling. I think that sometimes trainers will have one thing that they do, and they do it well. And to be able to have, you know, three such different brilliant horses and get the best out of them, it's just something that deserves to be recognized and impress the heck out of me.
Agreed. And that was the, I think, the theme of pretty much everything I've tried to convey since, you know, even Saturday night, when hours later, once I was somewhere where you could, where your phone was charged and there was internet service, the impression that the performance gave you, and then the overall attempt to comprehend the achievement, that was difficult. And I've been very fortunate, and I said that I was grateful to be a witness to all of this, and I've seen five of his six races. I wasn't there for his maiden win. I was there, though, for the allowance in the Santa Anita Derby. And so, you know, being really along for the ride, and when you look, Pete, at the PPs, and you see the progression of the distances and his aplomb with every demand, that's what is just so impressive. And I had Andy Beyer on Monday, and Andy was, I don't want to say dismissive. People are being, you know, are kind of aghast at Andy's reaction to this, but he wants to wait to anoint the greatness factor until this horse gets a chance to run the kind of races that we saw Arrogate, California Chrome, Gunrunner. Andy's just, I think, upset or wishes that this Triple Crown sequence could have had a fully polished product that would leave everybody just gasping. I mean, the Herculean. It's a weird dynamic, and I see a lot of people grappling to put the horse in perspective, and I don't think we have to yet. We can just acknowledge what a stunning 3.5 months this has been for one individual horse.
I love that attitude, and I agree that it's very hard to assess history on the day after history, as much as everybody wants to try to do that, and as much as it's your job, Steve, and my job, Steve, as a broadcaster, to try to do just that. It's not really exactly the fairest or smartest way to get some perspective. Time is what leads to perspective, and I think, to be fair to the big horse, some of why the inefficient way the Derby was run, I think, made it look to some less impressive than it really was because of how fast they went. They went early in that race. I mean, looking at pace figures for it, they make your eyes pop out of your head. But it's not, when they're slowing down that much at the end, it doesn't make the jaw drop the way it did when Arrogate put a complete race together. But, you know, the good news, we hope, is the horse comes through this A-OK, and we get to see a performance like that at some point over the summer and into the fall. And I do think that will help us put this horse in context way more than if these six races are all we have. He could be one of those horses who's always hard to evaluate, or maybe there's something special waiting down the line. I'm certainly hoping it's the latter.
Exactly, and that's exactly what that's what Andy was conveying for those that that aren't fluent in curmudgeon.
I mean, the guy, he's so sharp, he's so smart, he's seen so much of this stuff. He knows not to get swept up by the shiny new toy. I think it's a tremendously intelligent attitude. He had his mind, you know, I talked to him before all three Triple Crown races and had his mind very open to the horse. And some things, another thing, you know, I love racing fans, and I think, and when I say fans, I mean like people who are fans more than gamblers. And I think sometimes gamblers can be too dismissive of fan attitudes. But I also think sometimes fans cannot understand when somebody like Andy Beyer is making his assessments about a race. There's no, you know, the term hater gets thrown around and things like this. And that's not it at all. When your job is to make objective assessments of racehorses, you're going to try to remain as objective as possible, whether that's to, you know, do the job of making figures or to try to cash a few bets along the way. And it's not wise for the fans among us, I think, to get too bent out of shape because certain analysts aren't willing to join the chorus, if you follow my meaning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Pete, I've got Mike Smith is going to join us in the next 5 minutes, so
fabulous.
We can, your call, we can delve into the results, or we can pause you and come back to you after we talk to Mike. Your call.
Well, I think once you have Mike on the line, I would kick me right off. I'll be very clear about that. But if you have a minute, we could very quickly talk about the contest, because I don't have a ton of information. I've yet to speak to the winner, Karen Carey, but I plan on doing that. I believe she's an At the Races listener, a registered nurse from Manhattan. But I do have a couple observations about the end of the contest. If you have a minute for me,
Go ahead.
Pick up whenever. So I think it's interesting because people look at these final scores and are surprised, I think, by how low the winning total of the high 38,000s was. And I just think I have the explanation, which was very tricky to come up with horses, well, for me anyway, in the Manhattan with spring quality, and also with Gronkowski running second in the Belmont. I think there were a ton of players firing hard at the end, our buddy Jonathan Kinchin among them, who were looking at the past year's results, assuming it was going to take 80 or 100,000 even to get there, and they were plotting aggressive courses to get there. And I think those two results kept those scores very much in check, not to take anything away from what the winner did. But yeah, I saw a lot of people sort of surprised. Oh, what, especially with Jonathan. What happened to Jonathan? He was up there on the board with 30,000 and he ended on zero. Well, you know, take an aggressive swing to try to get to the number you think is going to win. And then sometimes after, it doesn't look good when you then see, oh, wait, the winner only had 8,000 more. But I think it really comes down to not just the decision tree and the paths of the way that life went in those last two races, but what you might have thought would have happened in those two races before the Manhattan, I think is what led to that. But it was great to see Karen's name up there. I'm supposed to be a real racing fan and somebody who qualified through the $500 Gotham tournament. So as a guy who covers tournaments for a living, anytime you can tell the story of the person who gets in for short money and walks away with $100,000, you're very happy. and that pretty much describes me. I would have gotten to her already, but for the fact that I'm out here in California, we're working on the edit of the TV show this week. But I really look forward to talking to her soon, and perhaps as soon as next week, I can give you some more details on how she got there, Steve, and a little bit more about her, because she sounds like a really interesting character, and hopefully somebody who's going to be a new fixture in the contest scene.
Very cool, excellent. Well, we'll let you pull that together, and we'll reconnect next week.
I love it, Steve. Thanks. Always a pleasure to talk about this stuff with you.
Pete Fornatel, everybody. Looms boldly, and check out the podcast and everything. Didn't talk about what's coming up this weekend contest-wise, but plenty of opportunities. Go to drf.com. The tournaments drop down, and you can always check in with Pete. Let's do this. We're going to take the timeout right here. Come right back. Mike Smith joins us, and we'll talk about what just feels like the literal crowning achievement of his Hall of Fame career. I wrote him yesterday. They're going to have to recast the Hall of Fame plaque. You know, that's one of the problems when they put jocks in, you know, 20 years into their careers, and they note the career highlights. Well, Smith's got another three dozen career highlights, maybe more. since his plaque was put up in the Hall of Fame. Mike Smith next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's by Heatseeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, about 20 minutes, a little less, to the top of the hour. Sid Fernando for Hillendale. Pedigree Watch, when we turn the corner right now, though, Mike Smith joins us, and I don't know how many more conversations we could have with Mike Smith to talk about a new career high point. How many more can there be, Mike? Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm trying to come up with new words and stuff. I can describe, justify, and what's happened to me. It's just so blessed and happy and very complete.
And that's a good word. Complete.
You know, if it's time for it all to end, man, wow, what a way to call it a career, you know. But it, by no means is it. I'm not saying that. I still feel I got a few good years left in me.
Well, if you're gonna keep getting the horses like this,
yeah, right,
to ride,
you start riding, will you?
Exactly.
Yeah, I hear you. I totally agree.
Before we talk about the whole perspective and retrospective and you know, put it into personal terms, let's talk about loading up the anticipation, the plan, all the elements of what it was going to take to win on Saturday?
Well, you know, to me, you know, coming out of the one hole, I really wanted to get out of there. You know, I heard that there might be a couple of the horses that might try and go, but just off paper and knowing my horse and where I drew, I knew that if I could jump well, that I was probably the quickest. You know, that I could. Although the first quarter might be a little quicker than I'd like, I was hoping that, you know, once I got into that turn, I'd be able to hopefully dictate the race somewhat. You know, man, he left there about as good, if not better than he ever has. I mean, he left there so good out of the one hole, and I was able to, you know, get him up in there and ahead of everyone going into that first turn. And that was the big key for me as far as the important part of my job anyway. And then it's just a matter of, can I get him to turn off and get into a comfortable rhythm and get him to back up that second quarter and then start trying to dictate the race at that point, you know, play a little cat and mouse, see what I could do. And, you know, he was just brilliant. I mean, as soon as he went in that first turn, and that's what's great about Belmont, too, is it's so big that once you get away from the crowd, it gets kind of quiet back there, and horses kind of just, like, they get, I'd say the word kind of lost a little bit. Not lost, but they get to looking around like, whoa, a lot of room out here, you know. It's just kind of big, and he just backed right up, really relaxed. I think we went the first quarter and 23-1, and which is pretty quick. But the second quarter, I think, was 25 and change. That's where, you know, that's where things slow down, and he's able to get into that rhythm and then, you know, get ready for anyone who is going to, you know, challenge him.
To lay out the quarters, because they're a big part of the story, 23-1, 24-4, 25-1, 24-4, 24-4, 25-1. And Mike, when we look at Belmont's and horses of his heft, I kept, you know, reaching back for Point Given, and that this was a racetrack uniquely suited to his size and his style,
and
as
his
opposed
power,
to,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, for a great example, too, Point Given is a big example. But, you know, you remember the big rivalry between Easy Goer and Sunday Silence, you know. Sunday Silence was such an athlete, you know. He was, you know, just so quick around, like, the turns, like at Pimlico, where they didn't help Easy Goer much. But this, you know, that big racetrack, Easy Goer got on Belmont, and, man, that big power, those big turns, he could really run those turns, and it just showed those racetracks suit those kind of horses. And I thought that going in the beginning of everything, I thought Belmont, that this horse would really like those big turns, and with his power and his strength, and he'd get over that sand really well, and he did. I mean, he loved it.
You also, notably, and this is what kind of figured with the assumption that he was going to do this on the front end, whenever somebody would come to call, you would let him out another notch. I mean, how many times did you ask, and did he have to respond to anybody advancing?
Well, especially going into the, before we went into the far turn, I let him out a notch just to make the closers kind of run, have to run to him a little early, which kind of a lot of times, if it's there and it's coming easy to you, you can take advantage of it, because a lot of times it'll take the closing kick away from them closers, you know, when you make them make several moves instead of just one big move at you. And that's kind of what I was trying to do. So I did that several times. But, you know, the half mile pole, we kind of got away from him, and then they came running to him, and he got a little breather when by the time they got to him. And then, man, he was right on the bridle again and ready to take me again. And I felt very confident at that point that, you know, unless just someone just ran some race unforeseen, that we have a big shot at, we got a big shot at this. And, you know, we hadn't even come out of the turn yet, you know.
In the late stages, and when you turn for home, and of course you won with Palace Malice, you won with Drosselmeyer, talk about the what is affectionately known as the wall of noise that starts to rise as you come down the stretch.
And it does, man. I mean, as soon as we're coming down the stretch, and I, you know, I hadn't asked him yet, and I felt very confident, but I mean, I just kept telling myself, come on now, stay focused. That's right. Come on, keep going. Let's go. Come on. So I try to block it all out, to be honest with you. You know, and then we hit the wire. I actually rode through the wire, you know, and we stood up and talk about the wall of noise and the emotions that just came come rushing in. I mean, it was, I wish I could put it into words to describe it a little better, but it was just incredible. It was unbelievable. I got to go in the dictionary and start looking up some big words.
You were on the horse of Nix for American Pharoah, and you were watching from behind, and you participated in any number of the Triple Crown attempts that fell short. You know, talk about that element and your Belmont experience, which of course, you know, is a huge part of your career, your time in New York.
Oh yeah, I mean, it makes it more special for me. I mean, you know, I've always just, even now when I go back to New York, it just kind of feels like home. You know, I've always, I spent so many years there. I got so many great friends and fans there, and I mean, it was. It made it even that much more because I was back in New York, and yeah, and I have, you know, participated in it before, when American Pharoah won, and it was crazy, you know, and I just couldn't imagine myself, what would that be like, you know, but I wonder what that feels like. Now I can tell you it's indescribable, man. You can't, just no words for it. It's just, it's kind of like a waves of emotion, you know. It'll hit you all of a sudden, you know, you'll be okay for a while, and out of the blue, man, just boom, here it comes again, you know. It's never ending. It's life changing.
And it's hard to believe, I'm sure, that after the most recent successes, whether you think Arrogate and we go back to Zenyatta, with each of these horses, Mike, that have come along, I don't even know myself what, when I bring those names out, how to even present it to you, because it doesn't seem possible that a Zenyatta arrives and then an Arrogate and now this horse.
Each one of them would have made just one career in itself. I mean, that's how great those horses, you know, horses were, man. They're incredible horses. I mean, you know, and then you're best to ride horses like that, man. You just got to, you know, try and make right decisions, and they're so talented, man. They're going to get the job done. But, again, it's just, there's nothing like, you know, I think experience, you know, you take care of yourself and you stay in good shape. And even at my age, I mean, I feel like I can go in the gym right now and compete with, you know, with any rider anyway. I can't mess with too many, you know, other different athletes, but I mean, I can go pretty strong in the gym, and I feel great. I feel just as good now as I did when I was in my 30s, as far as that goes.
And speaking of which, in the terrific Tim Layden recap, Tim produced one of the stories that hadn't really, you know, come to the surface, which is a story with Baffert going back to Vindication, and that this is maybe the the tipping of the scales now, and that Bob has paid whatever debt he needed to for taking you off Vindication.
Well, I knew early on if I can hang around Paul, man, he's gonna help make my career just go places it'll probably, it could never go, you know. I just know that I had to stay close to him. So when that happened, whenever he told me, listen, I'm gonna put the, you don't have to make a change with Vindication, and we hadn't even got beat, you know. I, you know, instead of getting upset, you know, and I just said, you know, Coach, I said, I understand. I said, you know what, thank you for the opportunity. I said, but listen, don't trade me off the team. I said, just put me on the bench there and you call me up when you think it's time. I'll be your sixth man. I'll come in and then I'll play until it's time for me to start again, you know. And just blessed that throughout the years I've been able to do so good with Bob. And he's just, I can't even tell you. The man is brilliant. I mean, he don't need no one to tell him how great he is. His record just speaks for itself. It's incredible. But, you get to ride for a man like him and people I've been blessed to ride for. Your career is going to go places. It's going to skyrocket, man. It's going to go places that you never dreamed it could go.
When you got the call for the allowance after Big Cap weekend, this was the next day, and you were going to get on board. What had you been told going in to the start of picking up the mount?
Well, I mean, everyone knew how talented he was, especially after breaking his maiden the way he did. But yeah, I was extremely excited about getting the opportunity to ride him. You guys remember I was riding at McKenzie as well for Bob. And he's a really nice 3-year-old as well. You know, he's just not starting back. I think you'll see a lot of his name too down the road. So at the time, you still don't know. McKenzie had certainly done a whole lot more than Justified had done. So, you might have a bit of a conflict there, but McKenzie wind up getting hurt. Just nothing too bad. Thank God he didn't get hurt too bad. And it was just something they had to put him on the shelf a bit. And so I was able to ride him, and the whole thing just worked out. You'll have to probably talk to Bob. He'll probably explain more of it better than I can. Very excited to get the mount, and then when a lot of times the horse looks so great, first time out sprinting, that you never know about those two turns, and so whenever he passed the test with the two turns, people, you couldn't help but start daydreaming what this horse was capable of doing. But to pull it off, the number of races that he had, I think it's incredible. I mean, Bob, his whole crew, just to get this horse ready to do what he did in such short time, I mean, it's beyond belief.
The post-Preakness, and we talked after Derby. We didn't talk after, and actually before the Santa Anita Derby, we talked as well. So we've had some check-ins along the way, but after mm-hmm. Preakness, and with the opportunity to ask you the question here, we saw the quotes, and I've maintained that, as we talked about how the horse is built for a place like Belmont, and that it was going to play to his strength, that to me, between the condition of the track and the poor banking at Pimlico, that it played against him, and it was a bit of an optical illusion, and not to mention the fact that he dueled with the juvenile champion all the way around. I mean, some added perspective looking back at that Preakness.
The Preakness, believe it or not, I was more nervous about the Preakness than I was the Belmont. I'm with you. I mean, I thought that he ran a huge Derby, man, and awful fast. We're coming back quick. Pimlico's tighter. It started to rain again. It's getting sloppy, and that's it. This is when things can happen. When it's a short field, everyone thinks, oh, he's got to do is go around it. That's when you get beat. So the Preakness was the one that was tricky to me, and then I'm trying to, you got to keep in the back of your mind too as well certainly the first thing is to win this, but try not to empty him out like the Derby's a tough race. You don't want to go in with another hard race into the Belmont. He's gonna empty out. So you're trying also not to do more than you have to do, to get it done. And saying that, by no means that I realized Bravado was going to run like he did that day. He ran a heck of a race that day. He just come flying out of the clouds, but. I felt pretty good, even though the margin was short. I felt pretty comfortable with him. It wasn't his favorite, it wasn't his best race, it wasn't his favorite track, but we got the job done, and galloping out went Lobazo got to him in tenfold, but he jumped back in the bridle. He wasn't about to just give up, man. He was going to fight no matter what, you know. So once we pulled that off, you know, that was the one that I was worried about. If he was to ask me, now that we've been blessed to pull the whole thing off, which one were you more worried about? It was probably that one.
Well, there's always, you look at all the Triple Crowns, for the most part, some of the, you know, the oldest, the winners didn't necessarily face, you know, much competition, whether in number or in quality, but there always seemed to be a defining moment in each of the, you know, the Crown races, a place where, you know, the horse was girded for what was going to come next. And, you know, for Pharaoh, it was Derby, and it's going to turn out for Justify, it was the Preakness. And he's answered.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And you never know that when a horse gets looked in the eye. I mean, that's the first time that someone, I mean, looking in the eye hard for a long ways, you know, and try to kind of bully him around a little bit and wear him out, you know. And it was, you know, for him to, you know, pass that test and show me that he would do that, and he'd get in the dogfight, and he didn't care. I felt really good about the Belmont as far as that he was going to run well. Now, if someone just jumped up and beat him, well, it wasn't meant to beat him. Someone just beat him. But I thought that he was, if I could just get him out there and get him comfortable at some point, that he was going to run a big race. And he did. I mean, he really did. Just to, like I said, I've run out of words to describe his efforts, man. It's just incredible.
Mike, there's going to be some exciting moments ahead with him. For you, having done this now and having joined, you know, a obviously narrow company in terms of a Triple Crown winning rider, all the other elements that have gone into a Hall of Fame career, what can you imagine there is really to do? I'll go back to the question we started with. What else can you do in your career, or do you just enjoy it for as long as it continues until you feel like you've had enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? There's nothing wrong with going back and doing things for a second time. there's nothing wrong with that. Going for seconds, just like when something tastes so good, you got to get some seconds, right? You got to go back and...
That's great.
If you put a little more on my plate here, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. I've got room in my belly for some seconds. I'm okay.
Well, the 2-year-old racing for the next Triple Crown winner.
Yeah, exactly. And I got a flight to Kentucky this weekend, and they're gonna present the trophy and everything there this Saturday at Stephen Foster Day. But I'm riding, Axeman's going to run back. I'm really excited about him. I'm excited about Mackenzie coming back. You know, I got Unique Bella. She's going to do a little travel. She might go back east a little bit. It's a lot of great stuff coming up, man. I got to pinch myself about every third step, man. It's
Well, it's been an amazing. For Justify, since February, and for even the most casual fans of the sport, Mike, this run of three wins and a Triple Crown, uniquely achieved, just remarkable. And you know your part in it. You know, we know how much. You know, and listen to what Baffert, you know, what he says about his trust in you, and you know what he needed from you as a partner for the horse. It says everything. And I'm just amazed, as is everybody that got to enjoy this. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. And again, you know, good Lord bless me. And I'm just smiling from ear to ear. I was, you know, they call me Smiling Mike sometimes too, a lot. And I always smile, but there's a bit something different to it now. It's reaching places I don't think it's ever reached before, my smile. So it's going to keep doing that. And thanks for having me on, and enjoy talking to you through this whole thing. And hopefully I'll be talking to you about a few more coming up.
Without fail. without fail. Mike Smith, everybody.
Already a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest of all time. And now he's added a achievement that just really puts the proverbial cap, the cherry on top. And now he's already looking for another. He's going to start searching for another Triple Crown winner. So much fun. Every time we talk to him, it's just so much fun. It should probably, you know, we'll do case when it comes to vacation. We'll put the two Mike Smith visits together from California before the Santa Anita Derby, and then at the end of this streak of four Grade One wins. The Santa Anita Derby, the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness Stakes, and the Belmont Stakes. Let's take a break. Top of hour two upon us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
This is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
This is Steve Cole from the Cole Ranch, a horse farm and training center located in California. We offer folks the chance to join hands with us to own a young racehorse from our farm. We're dramatically different compared to most popular racing partnerships because we don't charge fees or commissions, and we don't inflate the value of the horse. Most racing partnerships buy a horse at auction for, say, $100,000, then turn around and sell shares for $200,000. We value our horses realistically and don't add on fees or commissions. Right now, Cole Ranch is selling shares in a 2-year-old Calbred colt named Mr. Wickham. He's my heat seeker out of Serena's Echo, our stakes-producing mare, who is a full sister to multimillionaire Thor's Echo. You can get into this horse for as little as $1,000, which will entitle you to a 5% interest. If you want to invest in this horse, please call me at area code 805-990-3669 or visit us on the web at thecoleranch.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.